childcare remains too expensive and out of reach, we need to bring costs down with a significant public investment in our childcare industry.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela LaFrac, and you just heard Vice President Kamala Harris promoting the Biden administration's plan to expand the country's social safety net. Part of that plan involves increasing the amount the government spends on childcare by a factor of 5. It's a massive proposal, and it's caught some lawmakers off guard. But most do agree on one thing. The country's childcare system is broken, including right here in Vermont. Parents can't afford it, and providers can't afford to pay their employees. Now, these issues aren't new, but they have been exacerbated by the pandemic. That's why today on Vermont Edition, we're going to be looking at the current state of the crisis. We'll also hear from people living through it and explore some plans to fix it, including how Vermont is about to push out nearly $30 million in federal relief funding to the childcare sector. Now, later in the hour, we're going to hear from childcare providers and workers directly who are on the front lines of this issue. But first, we're going to start with the parents' point of view. Joining us today is Allie Richards, the CEO of Let's Grow Kids, an organization that's working to ensure affordable access to high-quality childcare in Vermont. Allie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Michaela. Pleasure to be here.
We're also joined by Josh Rooney. He's a mentoring coordinator and teacher in the Champlain Valley School District and a father. Hi, Josh.
Hi.
Now, Allie, before we dive into the brass tacks of your advocacy work and all of the legislation that's kind of swirling around right now, I'd love to start with your experiences as a mother. So could you tell us a little bit about your family and what your childcare situation looks like right now?
Oh, I would love to. Thank you for asking. It's funny, I often joked, you know, we're helping to facilitate a movement for high quality, affordable childcare in Vermont. And, you know, maybe my husband and I would experiment and put our kids through it when we helped fund and fix this. And then I had twins. So I guess I didn't really see that plan through all that well. And I have incredible almost 3-year-old twins, Beau and Wesley. So even though I've been working in the realm of childcare policy for over a decade, and I'm helping facilitate this movement through Let's Grow Kids, it took me until my kids were 11 months old to find childcare. So piece things together. And thank goodness I have a parents nearby and my own grandmother. I mean, it really takes a village. It really does. And so I think often, Michaela, of how many Vermonters do not have even one of the sort of support networks that I had in place, of an employer that deeply understood this issue and was flexible. My parents nearby, a husband that could support the care team as well. So, you know, then we found that care. It was amazing. 6 months and COVID hit, we lost it. So we actually moved into my parents' house an hour away for the last year and a half. We've just now come back and we've got the care back and we're in our own homes. And it's incredible to be part of a high quality childcare center. It's part of your family. It's part of your community. And every single day we drop off or pick up and we see the struggle in that center, trying to provide high quality care, trying to keep staff, trying to fill their own tanks up when they're there supporting families. And, you know, we all kind of feel like we're in an impossible situation right now. It's a pretty rough moment. We're at the end of a long, long, long stretch. My kids are actually in quarantine right now because of a potential exposure last week. So it's a tough moment.
Right. And as cases remain high in Vermont, it does seem like I'm anecdotally hearing a lot more instances of childcare centers having to shut down rooms or even the entire center in order to quarantine people who have tested positive and keep everybody safe. Now, Josh, tell us a little bit about you and your family. How does childcare work for you?
Sure. So we have a 22-month-old daughter named Maeve, and she currently, I work 4 days a week and take Fridays off to spend with her. And she spends 2 days in a high-quality home program that we were really fortunate to find, and spends 2 days with my parents who live in Shelburne.
And did you all consider doing full-time childcare, or what went into the decision to go with this sort of part-time hybrid model?
Well, we definitely were going to do full-time childcare. Well, I shouldn't say that. We were going to do part-time childcare in a childcare center 3 days a week pre-pandemic, and then 2 days with my family. And she went to childcare when my partner's maternity leave ended. And then she was there for about 3 weeks, and they shut down when the pandemic began. And we did the childcare shuffle at home, along with a lot of other families, around how do we work and take care of our, at the time, you know, going on 4-month-old, which was pretty unmanageable.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had to decide who's going to, how are we going to do this? My parents could only do a certain number of days. So when we looked at whose career could flex and whatnot, that ended up being mine. So I took a furlough through my employer. They were really understanding. And then in the fall, they needed me to come back to school. And I tried that for the first quarter, working full-time and, you know, in a hybrid schooling model and trying to split childcare up with my partner, and it just didn't work. So I ended up getting a part-time job so that I could do care, and my partner could keep working, and my family could continue to provide the care at the level that they were.
Yeah. Now you mentioned that you took a furlough from work for a few months, and I'm curious how that affected the family's budget. Now we know that a lot of families are paying sometimes more than their mortgage on their house for childcare. So if you're comfortable sharing, do you know around what percentage of your family budget is taken up by childcare right now?
Let's see. Our current childcare, and that's 2 days a week that we're paying for,
mm-hmm.
Is equivalent to half of our mortgage payment.
Hmm.
So it's very significant. And were we to need full-time care, we would either have to find a way to pay for it or downgrade the level of care that we're looking for. I think, you know, we made a conscious choice to put our daughter in a program that was as high quality as we could find, and we were willing to pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some flexibility to do so because we didn't need full-time care. But the cost of childcare is, it's incredibly prohibitive. I mean, it's, I'm tempted to say it's outlandish. And I say that with the understanding that childcare providers are not by any means getting rich.
Right. Now, Allie, I want to talk a bit about how this this childcare crisis affects women in particular. And Josh, I'm so glad that we could have you on the show, because while the childcare crisis in many ways primarily affects women, we want to highlight the role that some men do play in you know, taking on this burden of childcare in order to normalize it and to promote that. But Allie, can you tell us a little bit about how the childcare crisis affects women and how that's been exacerbated during the pandemic?
Absolutely. I'm so glad to have Joshua on as well. It helps us all remember this is not just women's issue. This is all of our issue. It's not just families and dads and grandparents, as you heard from mine, and great grandparents in some cases. It's also a business issue, Michaela. I mean, think about the labor shortage in general, right? Our labor shortage shrank to the smallest it's been in 30 years, and 28,000 Vermonters who left the workforce during the pandemic are saying they're not coming back. And mostly it's because of childcare. So huge, huge impact on our economy and our businesses. Now we know through data that women do bear the brunt of it. Within that huge impact, you know, women really do bear the brunt, as you said. I mean, women were 4 times more likely than men to reduce their hours or leave the workforce for caring for kids during the pandemic. And since the pandemic began, 80% of those who left the workforce across this country were women. So women's labor participation has hit a 33-year low in January of this year. We know it's because of childcare. But you know, I just need to also say, I'm listening to Joshua, I'm thinking about my own experience. This is ludicrous. Why are we doing this? Think about the stress for these families at a time that is supposed to be joyful, wonderful. You're nurturing a child, creating their foundation for the rest of their lives. And yet we've created the worst crucible. Not only is it expensive, not only are you piecing things together, you know, you're also breaking up the fabric of the family by night shifts, day shifts, right? You're also not supporting those that are doing this work. And we haven't even talked about that access, right? So it's expensive, it's hard to find, and only 3 out of 5 of Vermonters' youngest children had access to childcare before the pandemic. So major crisis. And again, that's half the side on the families piece. And then we're not even yet getting, I know we will, to what it's like for an early educator on the ground doing this crucial, crucial work.
Yes, and we certainly want to bring in their perspectives, which we will in just a few minutes. But first, Josh, I'd love to hear a bit more about how you and your wife have sort of figured out how to create a balance amidst this this sort of mess of childcare that we have sort of created for ourselves. Do you feel like you and your wife, do you have to, you know, have many conversations around how you're going to balance care day to day, or have you sort of figured out a schedule that works for you?
No, we've got a schedule that works for us. When we were trying to do it from home last fall, so like fall, September 2020, that was really hard, trying to coordinate who was meeting, who had meetings they had to be part of when my classes were, I was teaching on Zoom or responding to calls or whatever. Like, that was really, really hard. Right now, we have a consistent schedule, a fairly consistent schedule. Our provider is really consistent. It's always the same 2 days a week, and we occasionally have to flex based on what my parents' needs are. Mm-hmm. But fortunately, my wife's job is really, for the most, well, the job is really understanding. Sometimes she, because of what she's working on specifically, it's harder for her to take time off. But generally, if something comes up, both of us have jobs that are flexible around giving us time to go do that. Mm-hmm. And we're really aware that we're very fortunate to have the flexibility in our schedules that we have, and, you know, within our budget that we have, which doesn't mean that it's by any means easy. You know, we have been talking about growing our family, and that is the childcare piece is the prohibitive one. I find myself spending a lot of time thinking about how are we going to pay for this.
Yeah.
If we have another child.
I wanted to ask you about that. So is what you're saying that the cost of childcare might keep you and your wife from choosing to have a second baby?
Absolutely. Undoubtedly. Like that. We got married in 2015, and had we been on either stronger financial footing or there been had we been able to afford sending a child to childcare, we would not have waited until 2019 to start growing our family. But the cost of childcare was absolutely the deciding factor, the limiting factor.
Mm-hmm.
And neither of us was really also prepared for how we would feel when we had to go back to work after having our daughter, that I didn't want to go back to work particularly. And I know my partner really struggled with going back to work, but you know, we had to do it. We had to pay for childcare, and it was, you know, it felt pretty dicey for a while. So,
right.
And still does, you know. I think about, you know, adding another day to my job so that I can earn more money. It would mean spending less time with my daughter, which I do really enjoy. How would we, you know, we would have to find a new childcare provider, which is incredibly difficult. We got really lucky the second time around that, the provider we found, you know, we found through the network of friends and family who said, hey, I think this person is starting a home program and she's great. And I reached out to her and it sounds like she might have a spot. So then I called her and she said, yeah, I have 2 spots left. And I almost wrote her a check sight unseen just to lock that spot in.
Oh, Yeah, it sounds like for a lot of families, it's sheer luck happening into one of the spots at a childcare center or at a home care that feels safe and feels like a good fit for the family. Now, Allie, before we go to break, I do want to address some of the fixes that are floating around in the air right now, including the Biden administration's plan to essentially, throw a very large amount of money towards the childcare problem. And I'd like to focus right now on how it wants to help parents afford high quality care. Can you talk a bit about their plan and whether it feels like it addresses the issues that you and Josh and many other Vermont families are facing?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is what's so tough about this moment, Michaela. There's a real incongruity between this acute crisis. We've always had a crisis in childcare, and the pandemic has just brought it to a breaking point, right? And we've never been closer at the same time to a solution, both with the feds and within Vermont. So the beauty of what the feds are negotiating now is if they keep the whole plan intact, it is a good package, and it's exactly what we've been working on in Vermont. And it's exactly what all these other states have been working on, because we know exactly what to do for our kids and families to solve this. We know what to do. We just have not found the courage in this country to move the money around. That's what this is. So basically, both in Vermont and in the federal level, this package funds compensation for early educators to be the, and sort of like funds the true cost of care. So if you think about how, and you said at the beginning of the show, this is a broken, childcare is broken. What we really like to focus in on is the funding for childcare is broken. There's amazing high quality childcare happening through all adversity in the world right now. And it's just because there's no money. Parents pay more than they can afford, and early educators don't make a wage. So literally it's because there's no money to fund the system like we do education or other things. So the federal program, again, totally in line with our policy initiatives. It's pre-K for 3 and 4 year olds. So there's, an immediate sort of universal funding, 30 hours a week for 3 and 4 year olds, which reduces pressure for the rest of the childcare system, 0 to 3, and after care for pre-K. And then it funds, compensation for early educators and affordability for families. It just pushes money into the system to allow us to actually pay for what childcare costs, which mostly is a wage for these incredible early educators. And it allows then parents to not shoulder the entire burden of that care off their own paycheck. So just a quick note, so that would be beautiful. So if the feds really come through with this, it would be the first time ever we've moved on this as a country. It would be money from on high into Vermont, accelerating our efforts. But we're not holding our breath. We never do. We still have to charge for it in Vermont. The feds would be a welcome gift, and it wouldn't quite finish the job for high quality, affordable, and accessible the way we've defined them in Vermont. We're on a path in Vermont through legislation this year, H-171, passed pretty much unanimously, only one no vote in both chambers. And it basically said in 3 years in Vermont, we're going to find the revenue, figure out these sort of final questions on the governance regulatory system to push towards our twin goals of affordability for families, no more than 10% of household income, full stop on payment with a sliding fee scale for families below that. So really, means access for all families in a way they can afford, and then compensation for early educators, including benefits.
And I want to dive into the details around H-170 in just a minute once we come back from our break. But we are going to have to take a quick break and say goodbye to Josh Rooney, mentoring coordinator and teacher in the Champlain Valley School District and a local father. Josh, thanks so much for sharing your experiences.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Now, as we heard at the beginning of the show, parents are struggling to afford care and find open spots, but childcare providers face their own set of struggles. We're speaking with childcare advocate Allie Richards of Let's Grow Kids, and I'd also like to bring into the conversation Beth Workman. She's the director of Robin's Nest Children's Center, in Burlington's Old North End. And we're also joined by Beth's assistant director and an early educator himself, Jesse Contreras. Welcome to Vermont Edition to the both of you.
Thank you so much for having us here, Michaela.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Now, Beth, I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about your childcare center. Paint us a picture of what it's like and who the families are that you work with.
Sure. We are a play-based center in the Old North End of Burlington. We have a multi-age model, which means that our children experience a lot of mentorship amongst each other. A lot of learning goes on through working with children of their own age and those children who might be a little bit older and younger than them. So our curriculum is really based on the interest of our children. And our community is very diverse. That's one of the founding principles of Robin's Nest Children's Center, to serve all families. And a little bit about our center, we really have, from the beginning of Robin's Nest, and we opened in 1985, had a philosophy of putting teachers first and supporting teachers with the best wages possible. So it's really exciting for Robin's Nest to be part of this conversation because it's something that we have been working on since the very beginning.
And can you tell me how much of your overall budget goes towards employee wages?
It's really the main expense for Robin's Nest. About 80% of our budget goes toward salaries and any unsustainable income that we get that, you know, it's possible to spend. We're really pumping that into the pockets of our teachers. Mm-hmm.
And I think, are you at work right now? I think I can hear some kids in the background.
Probably can. I'm very close. <right now. laughs>
And have you faced the similar difficulties in hiring qualified staff that many providers have been facing in the past year and a half?
Absolutely. And this, there were many sleepless nights for sure within the last year looking at hiring staff. There's definitely a workforce shortage right now, trying to find quality staff. And you know, we're very, very fortunate that by the beginning of this school year, we have an amazing staff right now. So I'm really happy to say that we have that. But it was a little touch and go for a while over the summer. Mm-hmm. You know, some of our staff are part-time students. And so we were fortunate to have them working over the summer, but they go back to class. And, you know, we have very low turnover at Robin's Nest. So the majority of our staff have been here for a while and are high quality because they have the education and credentials to meet the needs of our children. But there's also the concern, and we did have one teacher who did make the decision to move into the elementary school teaching, and she was a licensed teacher. So, you know, to lose a licensed teacher is concerning. We do get some funding through universal pre-K, and also known as Act 166, by having a licensed teacher. So we are incredibly fortunate that, again, with some Robin's Nest support, we did have another licensed teacher on deck, so to speak, who was able to fill that role.
And I just want to jump in here to note that you mentioned a teacher leaving to go work in the elementary school system. Now, on average, Vermont child care workers earn around $34,000 a year, while kindergarten teachers make more than $55,000 a year. So there's a real pay disparity there that I can imagine is difficult as a child care provider to address when you're already on a tight budget.
Absolutely. And, you know, I feel like Robin's Nest, our salary range reflects the credential level, the classroom responsibilities, and the longevity of our staff. But, and we pay on the high end, I think, for our field, but it's not high compared to elementary school teachers or those in other fields.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jesse, I'd love to bring you in here. Can you tell us a little bit about what a day in the life is like of an early childhood educator? What kind of things are you doing every day?
Yeah, it's full of so many different things. It's kind of all over the place. It's spectacular. It's trying. It's tiring. It's just a good time. You know, we start, like Beth mentioned, we're a play-based center. We start our day with just a couple hours of free play. Parents are dropping off kids, saying goodbye. We have an atmosphere that I like to think is welcoming and inviting. And we want our families to feel like they're walking into, you know, kind of like their living room. We want our families to feel like they're comfortable and safe to leave their kids with us. So we have just that free play, and we really focus a lot of our work during those times where we're talking with kids and we're having conversations and we're helping them manage, you know, arguments or, you know, back and forths about a toy or an area or some disagreement. Or we're just watching them play. I think that is one of the things that I love to do as a teacher, is just observe and see what these kids are doing and how they're doing it and, you know, what it's like. And then, you know, we really like to get outside. We spend a lot of time on our playground and, again, where it's a lot of free play. And we do have some structured times here and there, but Robin's Zest, I think, is great for that reason, that we really let kids play and enjoy the time here at Robin's Zest. And then, you know, we pick and choose with what they're doing of what we're going to learn about at that time.
Right. Well, it sounds like a very busy and high energy day. Now, I'm curious, with all of this conversation that's going around in the media about, you know, how difficult it is to be an early childhood educator, how low paid they are, how much turnover there is, what is it like to go to your job every day to gear up and, you know, get that energy to be with the kids while there's kind of this all of this sort of negative information swirling around about how tough your job is? How does that affect your day to day?
For me, honestly, I think I don't feel it as much, honestly. I feel there's a little of optimism with all of this conversation and all this publicity, I would say, of what the field is getting, that there is some optimism within the job. I love my job. Going to it every day is, you know, can be hard at times, and, you know, Thursdays and Fridays, or in the middle of February or March when we haven't seen the sun past 4 o'clock in a couple months, it can be hard. But seeing the kids' faces every day and seeing the smiles on their face and knowing how excited they are to come and be a part of our classroom and be a part of the community in the school is something that gets me out of bed and gets me to work every day and with a smile on my face. And it's just what I love about the job.
Yeah. Well, now we have a couple folks on the line who want to share their experiences. Let's go first to Marie in Brattleboro. Marie, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you very much. Well, one of the things I would like to talk first is the term child care. I would like to change that to early childhood education, because we are educators. It's not, yes, we are taking care of the needs of young children. Believe me, some of them are very young, even months old.
And you said we, so you're an early childhood educator yourself?
I'm an early educator, an early education teacher for many years. I'm not working now because of the COVID has, have problems. But so I would like to ask of all these, the media and everybody involved, to change the term child care. We are educators. We are opening the doors, so to speak, the doors to the wonders of learning. We are inculcating in them the beauty of learning into their at the level we are teaching them. Right. Well, language, math, everything. So why to call those child care providers? It's not just, for me, it diminishes the profession, and that's one problem.
Now, well, I am going to cut you off just so we can make sure to get to other voices, but I appreciate your point about the professionalization of this career. I know there are folks who use different terminology here and there, but it does seem like one of the goals with some of this legislation that's out there is to standardize and professionalize training for early educators. Let's go now to Elizabeth in Lebanon, New Hampshire. Elizabeth, you are on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much for covering this topic, Michaela. This is really important, and it's lovely to hear these voices. I just wanted to applaud the caller who just called in, Marie. I couldn't agree more. This is a profession, and Jesse from Robinsons, you made it sound like such a wonderful profession, but at the same time, it is a profession. And my center, similar to Robin's Nest, we have a play-based curriculum, and at the same time, we nurture the social, emotional, and physical development of and support the language and pre-literacy skills of the future of our culture. And so this is a profession. This is a serious profession. And sometimes I think that people look at child care providers or early childhood educators, which is maybe what we should call ourselves, because we're in T-shirts and comfy clothes so that we can lie down in the dirt and look at the, you know, ants walking around with the little ones. You know, we're not valued the way that someone who's wearing a suit and a tie and standing behind a countertop at a bank is valued, and we should be. Colleges are dropping their programs which teach and give degrees to early childhood educators in favor of nursing and things that are higher income earning. So we've got a lot of reform to do. So while we do this reform, and I agree with everybody else on the show who's talking about how exciting it is that there's interest in the federal level, but there's one thing we could do immediately that would help families and people like me who are trying to provide, me and the good folks at Robin's Nest who are trying to provide child care to the children, which is, there is child care assistance. There are scholarships available in both New Hampshire and Vermont for families, and it's based on a factor of the federal poverty level. So, in other words, a family of four, the federal poverty level is set according to the size of the family. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem to take into account the number of adults whose income is there, by the way. And, Michaela, you mentioned about, you know, women being affected more, but even any single parent family is going to have a harder time meeting the threshold. The threshold is right now, you can get child care scholarships if you're below 220% of the federal poverty level. Mm-hmm. It should be a much higher number than that, much, much, much higher. It should be, I mean, I don't know, I'm going to throw it out, but 400% or something like that, so that the federal money, instead of getting tied up in bureaucracy or tied up in how we're going to argue and the governors are going to argue about how to do it, while those discussions are going on, and those are important, immediately, if that percentage could be changed, the money would go into the hands of the parents who are putting their children in child care. And so it could get to those families, they get it to the child care centers like Robin's Nest and Fit Kids, and we help support the teachers, which is what we're doing.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that point. And Allie, I'd love to hear you respond. Is this is Elizabeth's suggestion about raising the salary minimum that families need to hit in order to get financial support for childcare, is that something that your organization is advocating, or do you see another fix?
Oh, yeah, that's in essence what our plan in Vermont is. And I love hearing from these callers and just hearing the, you know, just how incredibly thoughtfully everyone is addressing this. And you know, basically, I would say two things. we need a lifeline. We are in a, this has always been a crisis, right? And now it's even more so because of COVID. So we need a lifeline right now to the field, which we're seeing, as you mentioned, $29 million of ARPA funds going out right now to Vermont early educators. They can use it for comp. They can use it for sort of expenses that they are incurring because of the pandemic, et cetera. That's a lifeline. You know, we will likely need more of that. That's a great, great moment right now. Let's use it well. Let's see how it goes. We have to then continue the momentum to march forward with a sustainable fix. And it's what Elizabeth is saying. It, you know, the H-171 literally says pretty much what you're saying, Elizabeth. You need to do two things. You need to, and so increasing the what you're saying about increasing the poverty level of those who can access this, that's exactly what our plan already is in Vermont. It just costs money. It costs money to do so. We have to find that money. You basically are saying every family has access to childcare financial assistance, every family. And you're, instead of saying it's a poverty level, you're saying every family is capped at 10% of their household income. So you're moving it to a income-based payment. So it's truly affordable and accessible to all. And then at the same time, you're paying for the true cost of that care because you're increasing wages for those early educators. And I just love, I just have to say, you know, Marie as well, and Elizabeth, and Jesse, you're describing what it's like every day on the ground. When you're on the ground with these kids looking at the ants and watching them play, the science is so clear, Michaela. Decades of unequivocal research. It's not just giving a kid a good time at that, you know, in that moment as they're playing. It's literally laying neurological pathways in their brain through those positive experiences. It's creating brain matter. And it's not just reading, writing, arithmetic. It's their ability to have healthy relationships with others over a lifetime. It's critical thinking, executive function. It's literally a, you know, propensity for or against addictive behaviors, diabetes, cardiovascular disease. So mental and physical health, social, emotional well-being, literally, you are forming the foundation a child will build off of the rest of their lives. So it is, you can sort of see how crucial that is, all of what you're hearing here from this incredible group of early educators. And that's the brain science that is clearly behind it.
Now, you brought up the American Rescue Plan Act and this money that Vermont is planning to start pushing out soon in the form of grants to childcare centers, different types of providers. Beth, what if and when you receive any of this funding, what will you use it for?
Yeah, we are really excited about how much our amazing state has been supporting early childhood education, especially during COVID. And these ARPA funds are really exciting to us. We're definitely going to use these funds to support teacher salaries. Again, like I was saying, you know, any of these unstable funds are, you know, sent to staff. And that is one of the pieces about ARPA is that it is a little unsustainable. Like this is going to be a couple years of funding. So that's when we're hoping that this, the work of H-171 is going to come into play so that it can kind of meet, you know, when these ARPA funding, this ARPA funding ends, then the work of H-171 sort of kicks off. You know, and Robin's Nest has really always, you know, our program has always used any of our monies for staff. So a lot of our things, our materials have been donated or borrowed or have actually been made by our members of our community. Jesse, fun fact, is an incredibly good builder. a lot of big projects and materials are not new at Robin's Nest. So ARPA is going to help us, you know, replace some cabinets that are 30 years old and were used to begin with. So that's going to be helpful. But again, we're always thinking about our families as well. So we're thinking about some creative ways to support these families. And the children in our care are too young to be vaccinated, and our health policies require that they get tested if they have any symptoms. So if they get a stuffy nose, they could be out of childcare for days while they're waiting to get those test results back. So those parents and guardians are not able to get to work while their children are not in care. So we're thinking about adjusting tuition so that they might not have to pay for those days that their children are home. And supporting this with those ARPA funds. So we're trying to get a little creative with the way that we're using that funding.
Right. I think that's an issue that it sounds like a lot of providers are trying to figure out right now. At the daycare that my own daughter goes to, they have instituted a new policy where they get kind of called 10 COVID days is what they're called, where, you know, up until 10 days, the school might have to close. After the 10th day, they'll start crediting parents back some money. But of course, they still have to, you know, pay educators throughout any COVID related closure. So I'm sure that's a very big issue for providers right now. Let's go to Rachel in Springfield, Vermont. Rachel, you are on the air.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me. I'm Rachel Hunter. I wear quite a few different hats in the early childhood field. I've been in the field for about 20 years. One of the hats I'm wearing is the outreach coordinator for the Vermont Association for the Education of Young Children's Advancing as a Profession project. So It sounds like you guys are having a really robust, exciting conversation around childcare and the supports needed for the educators and the families. And that's really the work of the Advancing as a Profession project, is to, you know, support our educators to make sure that they have livable wages, they have access to education, that they are well compensated and well taken care of, and they have access to medical insurance, dental, the benefits they need in order to support themselves and their families. So each day when they go in, they're putting their best foot forward and they have that capacity to do so.
Well, Rachel, thank you for calling in. It does sound like there's a lot of work from a lot of different folks trying to support childcare providers, educators right now. Now, as of January 2020, Vermont needed an additional 2,000 early childhood educators to meet the demand for childcare. And this is in the midst of a staffing shortage across pretty much every industry. And Jesse, I want to pose this question to you. As a educator yourself, how do you think that that we can get more people interested in the childcare profession?
I think for me personally, I feel like it starts with the pay, and it, you know, there's a stigma, I think, as well. I think it's been mentioned a little bit here about, you know, the job itself, and it's not in elementary school, or, you know, we're not considered teachers sometimes, but we are, we're educators. And, but it, I think it starts with the pay. I think you mentioned it, the disparity in what a preschool teacher or, you know, infant toddler teacher makes compared to a kindergarten teacher. Is staggering. It's quite a big difference. And, you know, you can't necessarily, you know, support yourself if this is your only job. I think for me personally, for a long time, I worked several jobs, coaching basketball, working at a bar, and working at Robin's Nest to support myself when I was a little bit younger. So I think that has a lot to do with it. And is a huge part for a lot of young people who are coming out of college with large amounts of debt, and looking for jobs right away. So I think it starts with that.
And Beth, as a as the boss here, what do you think? How do you attract more people to this profession?
We really do try to make our salaries reflect the quality of our staff. So we do the best that we can in those terms. But like all of our teachers also receive benefits like health insurance, retirement, paid time off for their birthday as well, and membership in our National Association for the Education of Young Children. And one of the big things that we do is really support professional development. You know, I think one of the things that keeps teachers at Robin's Nest is our outstanding community. We have really supportive families. So I think, you know, beyond the salary, and I will say, you know, there was a time, I've been at Robin's Nest for nearly 20 years. There was definitely a time when, and I wasn't always a director here. I'm a fairly new director. I've been a teacher for many, many years. There was a time when I, you know, thought about, you know, going into the elementary years, because that I was an elementary ed major. And it was, you know, we were living in a tiny little apartment in Burlington. And, you know, we were thinking, my husband and I were thinking about, buying a house, and it was just not doable with my salary. So we continued to stay in the apartment, but it was the community that I just couldn't leave. That was the important piece. And drawing, you know, but it's hard to draw teachers in saying, you know, we're a great community. You know, there are bills to pay. So I think that, you know, giving a worthy wage to these teachers is vital. You know, we're doing the best we can, but as a private center, it's hard to give them exactly what they're worth.
Mm-hmm. Now, Allie, there are a lot of elements to the Biden administration's plan to address the child care crisis. And of course, you know, as it goes on Capitol Hill, their big, you know, many trillions of dollar plan is going to get whittled down. That's just what happened. So if you had a, were able to sit down with President Biden and say, this is the one priority that I really want to get through the ringer on Capitol Hill to make sure that this happens, what one thing would you pick?
Well, I would, and I hope it was not cute too cute by half, I would pick the package for kids and families, right? It's essential infrastructure. It comes as a package. So, you know, I think that's what many folks are, by the way, saying to Biden and to our delegation. You know, we had hundreds and hundreds of contacts in, you know, to our own delegation who are all incredible champions of this. But basically, you need to understand that 0 to 5 is essential infrastructure. And so you need the pre-K and the childcare pieces. They are basically one, as you're hearing well today, it is all the same thing. High quality early childhood education, 0 to 5, whether you call it pre-K or childcare, it is all the same thing. Should be regulated, you know, the same way, the same standards, and supporting and respecting through compensation and benefits those that do it, right? So I would say the best thing you can do for a sustainable economy to actually have Americans have children. I mean, listen to Josh earlier, literally he's saying he's not having children because he can't find afford childcare. That is a problem for our society. So, you know, so literally you say, if you want to put Vermont and this country on a sustainable path, you want to have a stimulus-like effect on your economy, you want to put people back to work, support the workforce behind the workforce, and support all this brain development, it's the best return on investment you can imagine. I would say pass the childcare and pre-K package and push money into states to get this done. It is a no-brainer. It is the best return on investment we could ever imagine. We just have not taken the leap as a country to consider 0 to 5 essential infrastructure. But you're hearing from all the angles today, parents and early educators. Of course it is. And I just want to say, you know, in Vermont, you have the hardest work is still ahead. These ARPA dollars are great and they're going to go away. We have to fix it sustainably. We have to make sure H-171 is successful, moves forward. You can join the movement at letsgrowkids.org.
I'm going to have to cut you off, Allie. I'm so sorry. That is all the time we have today. Allie Richards of Let's Grow Kids. We also had on the air Beth Workman and Jesse Coutrier of Robin's Nest Children's Center. Thank you both so much for joining the show.